Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into, the most complex and frankly fascinating organ we know, your brain.
It really is quite something.
Yeah, it's just constantly taking in this flood of information, isn't it? From outside, from inside your own body, and somehow it translates all that into your reality, your thoughts, feelings, reactions.
And the really mind-bending part, I think, is this idea of predictive coding. Your brain isn't just sitting back waiting for signals.
Right.
It's actually constantly making predictions, educated guesses about what's likely to happen next.
Like when you flinch before something actually hits you.
Exactly. That's your brain predicting the impact based on tiny cues. It's creating your reaction, your reality, split seconds ahead. It's incredibly fast, super efficient, and it saves a ton of energy.
So what I'm experiencing right now, it's not objective reality.
Well, it's your reality. It's filtered, disevaluated against everything you've ever learned, all based on these ongoing predictions. It's deeply personal.
Okay. So our mission today is to unpack that. How does this incredible organ actually process information? You know, from conscious awareness down to those hidden automatic programs.
And crucially, how you can start to actively influence it, how you can shape your brain for, well, better balance and well-being.
Fantastic. Where do we start? Conscious versus unconscious.
That's a great place to start. So your conscious perception, that feeling of being aware right now, that largely happens in the neocortex, the wrinkly outer layer, the newer part evolutionarily.
Oh, okay.
But at the same time, there are these much faster unconscious programs running deeper down in places like the brainstem, the limbic system. These ancient parts.
And they're faster.
Oh, much faster. Yeah. Up to 1,000 times faster than your conscious decisions. They often kick off reactions before you're even consciously aware of what triggered them.
Yeah.
They use way less energy.
Wow. 1,000 times faster. That explains a lot about automatic reactions. So much is on autopilot, even when we feel like we're in charge. And it's not just specific parts working alone, right? It's about networks connecting everything. Like when your mind wanders, that feeling of just drifting.
Ah, yes. That's likely your default mode network, the DMN.
Mm-hmm.
It's particularly active when you're at rest, not focused on an external task.
Right.
It's busy processing memories, thinking about yourself, the future, that inner voice you hear.
Okay, the inner monologue network.
Sort of, yeah. But it doesn't work in isolation. It's constantly interacting with other networks, like the salience network.
Salience network? What's that one do?
Think of it as your brain's relevance detector. It's constantly scanning everything, internal sensations, external sights and sounds, and deciding, okay, what's important here? What needs attention right now?
So it helps you focus on what matters and filter out the noise.
Precisely. It directs your attention. Absolutely vital for navigating that avalanche of stimuli we talked about.
Makes sense. And going even deeper, you mentioned the brainstem, the really old part. It's just humming along, keeping our heart beating, us breathing.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the evolutionary bedrock, crucial for maintaining internal balance homeostasis, regulating breathing, pulse, digestion, body temperature, all without you having to think about it.
But does ancient mean it's just fixed? Like, we can't influence it?
Not entirely. And that's where things like the polyvagal theory come in. It really highlights the role of the vagus nerve.
The vagus nerve. I've heard of that. Our inner soother.
That's a good way to put it. It originates in the brainstem and wanders throughout the body. It's key in shifting us between different states like high alert or maybe withdrawal or feeling safe and relaxed, socially engaged.
Okay.
And what's really fascinating is that it's not just about responding to, say, a physical threat. It's incredibly sensitive to social cues.
Like a smile or someone's tone of voice.
Yes, exactly. A warm tone, a genuine smile, those can literally shift your nervous system towards that safe, relaxed state via the vagus nerve. And the exciting part is these deep reflexes aren't set in stone. They can be modified through things like positive social interactions, mindfulness practices. We can actually train our nervous system's responses over time.
That's really powerful, that even our most basic wiring can be shaped by connection and awareness. So if that's the foundation, where do our more complex feelings come in? The joy, the fear, the anger, the emotional command center.
Now we're moving into the limbic system. Think of it as the brain's emotional hub. Key players here are the amygdala, the hippocampus, and the hypothalamus, all working together.
Okay, the amygdala, that's the fear center, right?
Well, yes and no. It's famous for fear, but that's only part of the story. It's incredibly fast at registering anything emotionally significant, not just threats, but also potential rewards, closeness, joy. It makes split-second judgments about safety, before your conscious brain, the neocortex, really gets the memo.
So it's like an early warning system, but for good stuff too.
Exactly. It's involved in positive emotions, social bonding, learning what feels good.
Okay, so the amygdala flags the initial feeling. But how do we remember those feelings? Like, why does a certain smell instantly take me back somewhere?
That's the hippocampus. Think of it as the brain's librarian for experiences, especially those with an emotional tag. It takes experiences and files them away, linking them to context.
So it connects the smell to the memory and the feeling.
Precisely. That's why certain cues can trigger such strong emotional memories, even from way back, sometimes even triggering traumatic responses if the memory is linked to intense fear or distress.
Right. Does that mean we're just stuck with those old emotional links?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
And this is one of the most exciting discoveries in neuroscience in recent decades. For a long time, the dogma was that you're born with all the brain cells you'll ever have.
Yeah, I thought that too.
But we now know that's not true, especially in the hippocampus. New nerve cells can form there throughout adulthood. It's a process called neurogenesis.
Wait, really? We can grow new brain cells as adults?
Yes. It's incredible. It means the hippocampus retains this amazing plasticity.
Wow. Okay, how do we encourage that? Can we, like, boost neurogenesis?
Absolutely. Some of the most powerful ways are through physical activity, getting enough good quality sleep, and managing stress levels. These things create an environment where new neurons are more likely to grow and survive.
Movement, sleep, stress reduction. Sounds like good advice generally.
It is, but it has these profound effects right down to the cellular level in your brain. Now, also in the limbic system, we have the hypothalamus.
Okay, what's its role?
The hypothalamus is like the link between the nervous system and the endocrine system, your hormones. It controls the pituitary gland, which then influences hormone release throughout the body. It's especially key in the stress response.
The HPA axis. Hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal.
Exactly. The hypothalamus kicks off that cascade when you perceive a threat. But the problem comes with chronic stress. If that HPA axis is constantly activated, it can become dysregulated, essentially stuck in high gear.
And that effect?
It can profoundly impact your mood, your ability to connect emotionally, your overall sense of well-being. It makes it much harder to regulate your emotional responses.
It really is all connected. And it's not just what's in the brain, is it? You mentioned the body sending signals up to the brain, too. Interoception, fascia.
Yes, absolutely. Interoception is your sense of your body's internal state. Your brain is constantly receiving updates, your heartbeat, your breathing, muscle tension, gut feelings.
Like a constant internal weather report.
Kind of, yes. And your fascial network, that web of connective tissue throughout your entire body, is also a massive sensory organ. It's constantly sending signals up to the brain.
Really? Fascia sends signals?
Loads of them.
Yeah.
And these signals interact directly with the limbic system, influencing how you emotionally evaluate situations, especially under stress or fear. Your posture, your tension patterns, they're feeding back into your emotional state.
So movement like yoga or Tai Chi, it's not just stretching muscles.
No, it's optimizing this whole body-brain communication loop.
Mm.
It helps improve the clarity of those signals, leading to better body awareness and potentially better emotional regulation. It helps integrate mind and body.
That totally reframes things like yoga. Okay, so we've got all this sensory input, internal, external. How does the brain decide what actually gets through to our conscious awareness? There must be some kind of gatekeeper.
There is, and that's largely the role of the thalamus. Think of it as a very sophisticated, intelligent relay station or doorman.
A smart doorman, I like that.
Yeah, almost all sensory information, except smell, which has a more direct route, passes through the thalamus before reaching the neocortex for conscious processing. But it's not just passively relaying signals.
What does it do then?
It actively filters, modulates, and integrates information. It decides what's important enough to pass through to your conscious awareness. Its activity patterns, the rhythmic brain waves like alpha and theta, are strongly linked to whether you're feeling attentive, relaxed, drowsy, or creative.
So it shapes our state of mind, too.
Absolutely. It's a highly active, dynamic structure, constantly influencing your perception.
Okay. And working closely with the smart doorman is the prefrontal cortex, the PFC, our inner boss.
That's right. The prefrontal cortex, especially the frontmost part, is crucial for what we call executive functions. Things like planning, decision-making, working memory, and importantly, impulse control. It works in close partnership with the thalamus to regulate thought processes.
So the thalamus filters what comes in, and the PFC decides what to do about it.
That's a good simplification, yes. The connection between the thalamus and the PFC is vital for focused attention, for overriding automatic impulses, for making considered choices rather than just reacting.
And can we strengthen that connection, make our inner boss more effective?
Definitely. Practices like meditation, mindfulness, even just taking conscious pauses during your day, these activities directly exercise and strengthen that PFC thalamus circuitry.
So it helps you gain more self-control, break out of old habits.
Exactly. You're literally strengthening your brain's capacity for conscious regulation and making it easier to step out of those ingrained automatic patterns.
It's just incredible how much the brain does automatically and thinking about the energy cost.
Wow. It's a huge factor. I mean, think about it. This organ, maybe 2% of your body weight.
Yeah.
It uses about 20 to 25% of your body's total energy budget when you're at rest.
A quarter of all our energy just for the brain.
Yep. It's an energy hog, and that's a major reason why it relies so heavily on shortcuts and automation on that autopilot mode.
Because conscious thought is expensive, energetically speaking.
Very expensive. Those unconscious processes, running on established pathways, are, as we said, up to 1,000 times faster, but they also use significantly less metabolic energy.
So when we're stressed, tired, overwhelmed, the brain defaults to the cheaper, faster option.
Exactly. It's an energy conservation strategy. It falls back on familiar, well-worn neural pathways, those habits, those automatic reactions. It prioritizes efficiency and, well, survival.
Okay, so that autopilot, it's driven by that interplay between, say, the frontoparietal networks involved in attention and the limbic system driving emotions.
Right. And under stress, the balance shifts. The amygdala gets prioritized, pushing those faster, more reactive responses to the forefront. It sort of hijacks the system.
Which makes sense with things like the global workspace theory, the idea that our conscious awareness is like this limited spotlight.
Yeah, consciousness has a bottleneck, can only handle so much information at once. Meanwhile, all these unconscious processes are running in parallel, handling vast amounts of information behind the scenes.
So the big question then is, if so much is automatic, can we actually consciously take back control sometimes? Can we override the autopilot?
Yes. Resounding yes. That's the empowering part. We absolutely can learn to counteract this.
Oh, what works?
Well, practices we've touched on. Mindfulness, meditation, specific breathing techniques, gentle movement like yoga or tai chi. These aren't just relaxation techniques. They are ways of strengthening conscious control circuits.
So they literally build up the muscles for conscious awareness.
In a way, yes. They help strengthen the prefrontal cortex's ability to regulate the limbic system, especially the amygdala. You become less reactive, more responsive.
Okay.
And movement, besides helping with body signals, also directly boosts the energy supply to your neurons. It improves mitochondrial function, the powerhouses in your cells. It's like a fountain of youth for brain cells, keeping them energized and resilient.
A fountain of youth. I like that. So we're not just stuck with how our brain currently works.
Not at all. And this brings us to perhaps the most hopeful concept in modern neuroscience, neuroplasticity.
Right, the brain changing itself.
Exactly. It's the brain's incredible lifelong ability to change, adapt, and reorganize itself in response to experience. Think of it like a muscle. The more you use certain circuits, the stronger they get.
So you can form new connections.
Yeah.
New pathways.
Yes, new connections, strengthen existing ones, weaken old ones. Even grow new neurons in certain areas, like we discussed with the hippocampus. It means you are fundamentally not stuck with old patterns. You have the capacity to change your brain.
That's huge. So how does something like meditation fit into this? Is it like targeted neuroplasticity training?
That's a perfect way to describe it. Meditation is essentially a targeted workout for your brain, intentionally activating specific circuits and over time physically changing them. It's like reprogramming from the inside.
And we can actually see these changes.
Absolutely. The research is compelling. We see tangible, measurable changes in brain structure and function.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Okay, so one major finding is increased gray matter density, particularly in the prefrontal cortex.
So the inner boss literally gets thicker.
Effectively, yes. Studies show that after just about 8 weeks of regular meditation practice, maybe 20 minutes a day, you can see this thickening. And that correlates with better planning, concentration, emotional regulation, impulse control.
Wow, 8 weeks, that's not that long.
It's remarkably fast, relatively speaking. We also see changes in the hippocampus. Meditation encourages that neurogenesis we talked about, strengthening connections there.
Which helps with memory and stress.
Right. It helps you process and let go of negative experiences more effectively, manage stress better. And conversely, the amygdala,
the alarm system.
It tends to become less reactive. Some studies even show it can physically shrink slightly with long-term practice. This means you generally react more calmly to challenges. The alarm bell doesn't ring quite so loudly or frequently.
Okay, so PFC gets stronger, hippocampus gets healthier, amygdala gets calmer. What else?
We also see improved connectivity between brain regions. For example, the connection between the PSC and the thalamus, that executive control loop, gets stronger. This helps with clearer perception, better emotional regulation.
And the default mode network, the mind-wandering one.
It tends to become quieter, especially the parts associated with self-referential thought that can turn into rumination or worry. Meditation helps you step out of those negative thought loops.
So how does this work right down at the cell level?
Well, it reinforces synapses, the connections between neurons. It's the neurons that fire together, wire together principle. The more you practice mindfulness or focused attention, the stronger and more efficient those specific neural pathways become.
Use it or lose it, basically.
Pretty much. Meditation also boosts the production of BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
BDNF sounds important.
It is. Think of it as fertilizer for the brain. It encourages the growth of new neurons and synapses and strengthens existing ones, particularly in areas like the hippocampus and prefrontal cortex. It's crucial for learning, memory, and adaptability.
And stress hormones. Does it affect those?
Yes. Meditation demonstrably lowers levels of stress hormones like cortisol. High cortisol can be toxic to neurons over time, so reducing it protects brain cells and creates a better environment for neuroplasticity.
Okay. And brainwaves. You mentioned alpha and theta earlier with the thalamus.
Right. Meditation often leads to an increase in alpha and theta brainwave activity. These patterns are associated with relaxed alertness, calmness, creativity, and improved communication within and between brain networks.
So pulling all that together, what are the real-world benefits for someone listening?
The practical effects are significant. It means better stress management day-to-day, clearer thinking and focus, more control over your emotional reactions, potentially enhanced creativity, and just a more conscious, less reactive way of living your life. You're literally training your brain for well-being.
That's incredibly promising. And how long does it really take? You mentioned 8 weeks for some changes, but does it have to be that long?
The 8-week studies show significant structural changes, which is amazing. But the good news is you don't have to wait that long to feel benefits, and neuroplasticity starts happening from the first session. Even just 5 or 10 minutes a day, practice consistently.
Even 5 minutes?
Yes, even 5 minutes can stimulate neuroplasticity. Consistency is probably more important than duration, especially when starting out. Every little bit helps build momentum and reinforces those new pathways.
Okay, so meditation is a powerful tool. Are there other ways to encourage this kind of inner balance and brain change?
Definitely. We touched on gentle movement, yoga, tai chi, fascia exercises. These improve that body-brain signaling, enhancing interoception. They help you literally feel what's good for you better, leading to more embodied self-awareness.
Makes sense. What about newer technologies?
Things like neurofeedback and biofeedback are interesting. They essentially give you real-time information about your own brain activity or physiological state.
How does that help?
By seeing the feedback, you can learn to consciously influence those states, like increasing focus, promoting relaxation, or improving sleep patterns. It's like having a mirror for your inner workings.
Cool. And sleep. We keep coming back to sleep.
Because it's absolutely fundamental. It's not passive downtime. Your brain is incredibly active during sleep, consolidating memories, processing emotions, clearing out metabolic waste.
Cleaning house.
Exactly. Deep sleep and REM sleep are critical for learning, emotional balance, and letting your brain recharge. Skimping on sleep undermines all these other efforts.
Got it. Sleep is non-negotiable. Anything else?
Yes, something simple but profound. Social connection and compassion.
How does that fit in neurobiologically?
Remember the vagus nerve, our inner soother. It responds powerfully to cues of safety and connection. A friendly conversation, genuine physical touch, even just feeling close to someone. These things directly calm your nervous system.
The kindness is literally good for your nerves.
Absolutely. Compassion, both giving and receiving it, activates pathways associated with reward and well-being and helps regulate that HPA axis, buffering stress. The vagus nerve loves compassion.
That's a lovely way to put it. So to kind of wrap this up, the big picture is...
The big picture is that your brain is not fixed. It's incredibly dynamic, adaptable, alive. It's constantly responding to your experiences, feelings, thoughts, and it can fundamentally change throughout your life.
Which means we're not just victims of our old wiring or habits.
Not at all. We have agency. By consciously bringing practices like movement, mindfulness, good nutrition, social connection, quality rest. By weaving these into our daily lives, we're not just boosting well-being in the moment. We are actively strengthening our brain's resilience and our inner freedom.
The freedom to choose our responses, to shape our experience.
Exactly.
Okay, so here's a final thought to leave everyone with. Knowing now that your brain is constantly making predictions, shaping your reality second by second, how might consciously cultivating positive expectations actually begin to reshape your daily experience? Something to ponder.